Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Stephen Nodman. I'm a member of this church. I also have a doctorate in ecology and evolutionary biology, so it's probably appropriate that I speak to you today about intelligent design and evolution. My talk is about intelligent design and evolution. You will note that I use the word and not or. There's an important reason why I chose the word, which should be clear by the end of this talk. But first, a little background. What is evolution? Evolution, or as Darwin called it, descent with modification, is a change in the characteristics of living organisms over generations, including the emergence of new species. The modern theory of evolution includes two critical parts. First, natural genetic variation in offspring, and second, natural selection. Evolution is not magical, but rather the outcome of natural processes. Its workings are as logical as gravity. I have in my hands a pair of dice. These are normal dice. But some dice are loaded with weights in such a way that they are more likely to land in combinations producing sevens or elevens. The concept of loaded dice is not difficult to understand. Loading does not guarantee certain outcomes, but it does increase their probabilities. It should also not be difficult to understand that in a population of organisms with varying traits, those individuals with traits most attuned to current environmental conditions are more likely to survive than those individuals with traits less attuned to current conditions. Unlike dice, biological organisms have the capacity to pass on characteristics to succeeding generations through what we now know to be the genetic code that is common to all living things on Earth. Within a population, individuals with characteristics that make them even slightly better at surviving to reproductive age will have more offspring. Succeeding generations of offspring surviving to reproductive age will have even more offspring. During successive generations, the proportion of individuals in the population with the more favorable characteristics will increase. As populations grow and become separated geographically into subpopulations, individuals with characteristics most favorable to each new local surrounding will tend to become more prominent in succeeding generations of their respective subpopulations. Eventually, the disparate subpopulations may become so distinct that they no longer are able to interbreed and have become distinct, separate species with common ancestors. Modern scientific data show that life has existed on Earth for at least 3.8 billion years. Thus, there have been many, many years and many generations for this process of descent with modification to give rise to the diversity of life that we now see on Earth. So what is intelligent design? Intelligent design, according to its main proponents, is the concept of, quote, certain features of the universe and of living things exhibit the characteristics of a product resulting from an intelligent cause or agent as opposed to an unguided process such as natural selection. These proponents say that intelligent design is a scientific theory that stands on equal footing with, or is even superior to, current scientific theories regarding the origin of life. Let me give you an example of the thinking of this concept. If I show you this watch, which many ministers who believe in design always do, you would most certainly agree that it did not come into being by chance. Very unlikely to have a watch just appear out of there. The parts and pieces of the watch were clearly designed so that when they were put together, the hands would move pointing to the hours and minutes and seconds of the day. You would surely agree that this watch, whose parts have such obvious purpose, was designed by someone. That someone, the creator of the watch, would probably be some human someone. As William Paley said in 1802, quote, "The inference we think is inevitable, that the watch must have had a maker, that there must have existed at some time and at some place or other an artificer or artificers who formed it for the purpose which we find it actually to answer, telling time, who comprehended its construction and designed its use." The quote is at the heart of the intelligent design debate. It is the image of the watchmaker, the metaphor being that the watch is so complicated that it is difficult for us to imagine its existence without an artificer or designer. For creationists like Paley, the same argument applied to the human eye, a heart, or a complete organism. Like a watch or a telescope, these things are very complex. So complex that it was hard to imagine their existence without the presence of a designer. Modern proponents of the concept of intelligent design would like the public, and especially the school boards, to think that this is a new idea with new evidence to support it. Their arguments are somewhat different than those given by Paley in the 1800s. Rather than talk about the complex nature of the eye, they talk about the, quote, irreducible complexity of the bacterial flagella. Also, this is serious, it's a very critical part of the intelligent design debate. Also, unlike Paley, they never mention the word God in their arguments, but rather use the word designer. Using the word designer rather than God is meant to sound more scientific. The strategy for using a word like design rather than creation was actually in response to a 1987 Supreme Court decision. In that decision, the court ruled that so-called creation science, which was the prominent intelligent design theory at the time, which does specifically mention God, could not be taught in public schools. While intelligent design proponents insist their findings are new, in fact, the argument that the complexity of nature indicates the existence of a purposeful, natural, or supernatural designer has been debated by philosophers for millennia. The first recorded arguments come from the Greek philosophy around 500 years BC. This teleological argument for the existence of God or designer was subsequently dealt with by the likes of Plato, Aristotle, Cicero, and Thomas Aquinas. Paley's watchmaker argument was well known to Charles Darwin. In fact, Darwin was required to read Paley's works for his theological studies at Cambridge, where he was studying to be a minister. In his autobiography, Darwin said that in college, quote, "the logic of Paley's book gave him much delight." While in college, Darwin had taken Paley's arguments on trust and was, quote, "charmed and convinced of the long line of argumentation." The amazing thing about Darwin and Paley is that Darwin used virtually all of Paley's arguments except to the opposite effect. Where Paley praised the amazing order and organization of living creatures as evidence of a magnificent creator, Darwin used virtually the same observations to laud the amazing consequences of descent with modification. Darwin summed up his differences with Paley and the creationists this way, quote, "the chief cause of our natural unwillingness to admit that one species had given birth to clear and distinct species is that we are always slow in admitting great changes of which we do not see the steps. The mind cannot possibly grasp the full meaning of the term of even a million years. It cannot add up and perceive the full effects of many slight variations accumulated during an almost infinite number of generations. Darwin addressed, actually, most of the issues that modern-day intelligent design creationists try to portray as new, quote, evidence against evolution. Darwin argued that this type of reasoning portrayed by creationists of his time, and would also apply to intelligent design proponents today, just shows a lack of ability to comprehend the time frames involved. During Darwin's time, geologists thought the Earth to be no more than 20 to 400 million years old. We now know that number to be about 4.6 billion years old, with life having been present for at least 3.8 billion years. Darwin argued that humans might have difficulty conceiving the time frame of millions of years. Even more difficult today is consideration of spans of literally billions of years. Here's how Darwin explained it relative to the evolution of the eye. Quote, in living bodies, variation will cause slight alteration. Generation will multiply them almost infinitely, and natural selection will pick out with unerring skill each improvement. Let this process go on for millions of years, and during each year are millions of individuals of many kinds. And may we not believe that a living optical instrument thus might be formed as superior to one of glass, as the works of the Creator are to those of men? Darwin first presented his theory to the public in July of 1858. However, he had actually developed the theory by 1838, shortly after his return from his famous five-year voyage on a ship named the Beagle. Why did Darwin wait 20 years to present his ideas? Darwin's first concern was for his wife, Emma. You see, Darwin, who had a bachelor's degree in theology from Cambridge, knew that his ideas conflicted with both the religious and naturalist dogma of the time. Emma was deeply religious, and Darwin's skepticism of religious dogma regarding creation and design caused Emma great pain and Darwin great sadness. Before the marriage, Darwin's father advised his son to actually keep his spiritual doubts to himself, telling Darwin that, quote, some women suffered miserably if they thought that their husbands would not make it to heaven with them in the afterlife. Darwin agonized for many years over the conflict between his scientific findings and what his religion told him. In fact, Darwin suffered through much of his life after the Beagle voyage with bouts of severe illness. Imagine the reaction of the public and the established church filled Darwin with dread. A decade after formulating his theory, he began to confide his secret to some trusted friends. However, he wrote that revealing his secret was like, quote, confessing a murder. Darwin finally decided to publish the theory after receiving the draft of an essay in the summer of 1858 from a younger British naturalist named Alfred Wallace. Darwin was surprised to find that Wallace had reached basically the same conclusions as his regarding evolution. Realizing that both he and Wallace had independently and unknown to one another conceived the very same theory, Darwin's 20-year writer's block ended. Didn't want to get beat to the punchline. They published the findings together. Perhaps Darwin's decade-long fears of exposing scientific beliefs that were contrary to religious dogma were related to his own knowledge of English religious history. You see, Darwin's wife, Emma Wedgwood, was and remained a devout Unitarian throughout her life. Charles Darwin himself had worshipped at Shrewsbury Unitarian Church with his mother and sisters, and as a boy attended the minister's school until his mother's death at age 8. Since the Unitarian dogma rejected the Trinity, English Unitarians were considered dissenters and had suffered from state-sponsored oppression in the British Isles for several centuries. The Shrewsbury Church's website claims that Darwin was baptized at another church, the St. Chad's Church, a traditional church, because, quote, dissenters were not given places at universities. So perhaps Darwin's personal knowledge and experience that Unitarians had suffered by expressing views contrary to Church of England doctrine contributed to his trepidation for releasing his own views on the evolution of life on Earth that were contrary to all Christian dogma at the time. I find it interesting that Darwin's struggles with religion and science are reflected in the discussions that we're having today on evolution. On the one side, some religious conservatives continue to see the theory of evolution as a threat against their beliefs, and therefore propose this duel between evolution and intelligent design. On the other hand, some notable scientists and science historians have stated that Darwin's theories of evolution have made it easier for people to accept atheism in their religious or philosophical beliefs. Yet Darwin rightfully concluded that science could neither prove nor disprove the existence of a God or a designer. Darwin's theory of evolution provides details on how biological diversity and new species are generated, but it does not tell us why. Why is it that the physical laws of the universe are such that this wondrous thing called life emerged? Why is it that this amazing process called evolution works so well to have produced the complex structures, organisms, and diversity that we see on Earth today? What we are talking about is the mystery of creation that is not testable and therefore does not lie within the realm of science, but rather within the realm of faith and philosophy. Through science, Darwin led an incredibly productive life and was able to answer many questions regarding how things worked in the natural world. But Darwin realized that the question that Paley and today's intelligent design proponents try to answer was beyond the realm of science. This dilemma affected Darwin's own religious views. Since science could not help him, he left the question open, and Darwin stated the following: "The mystery of the beginning of all things is insoluble by us, and I, for one, must be content to remain agnostic." In the beginning of this talk, I used the phrase intelligent design and evolution. Design proponents would have us use the word or, because they see intelligent design as an alternative to evolution. However, as a court in Dover, Pennsylvania ruled last month, intelligent design is not science. It is a belief, a particular religious belief that should not be taught in science class. The theory of evolution, however, is based upon scientific observation of the natural world. It is testable, and it is continually being tested and refined. Intelligent design proponents have resurrected a false conflict between subjects that will forever lie in two distinct realms. One, evolution, that has its place in the science lab and the classroom, and the other, the mystery of creation, that has its place in people's hearts and in their churches.